Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. I want to welcome back in our online friends on this program as well. Author Boris Fishman is making his first appearance on our program today to talk to us not only about his literary journey, but what it's been like for him to see the way that readers around the world have responded to his work. His newest novel that I read is called Don't Let My Baby Do Rodeo. We'll talk to Boris not only about the characters he's been able to introduce us to, but also what he hopes that we're able to take away from the book when we finish. Boris, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Cyrus. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. Congratulations to you on the new book. And, you know, I think the great thing about you, Boris, and we can kind of begin the conversation here, is that you have been able to be one of those authors that people are able to not only to enjoy your work, but almost to be able to be entertained and see a part of themselves in the characters you create as well. I mean, what has it been like for you to have that kind of connection with your readers?
Well, that's just about the greatest compliment I can get, because my goal is to write the smartest possible book for the broadest possible audience. I don't think those things are incompatible. I think sometimes in our culture, things are either the one or the other, but there's no reason that has to be the case. You can make people think while making them laugh or cry, and certainly above all, to connect. I want to create characters in whose lives readers will see themselves. And for me, that transcends all kinds of supposed boundaries and our identities and things like that.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because that's the other thing that I thought about, is that no matter where people may live, including our radio audience here in Mississippi, or no matter where they may live on the East or West Coast, you know, that we can feel as though we kind of know these characters. For you, though, I mean, when did you first realize that you were able to do that through fiction, that you were able to make that connection with the realness of life through characters you've created?
And by the way, I want to say that I've actually spent a little bit of time in Mississippi and was very struck how at home I felt in the South. I was born in the Soviet Union. I've spent most of my American life in and around New York in the Northeast, and have always felt something at odds with the environment here, just because of how intense and fast-paced and overambitious it is. And when I spent a little bit of time in Mississippi, didn't exactly come expecting to feel at home, such a different place, and yet I did, which I think says so much about what connects people and gives them a sense of belonging, which, of course, is what so much of this novel is about. But separately from that, to answer your question, I was, you know, when you immigrate from a country like the Soviet Union to a place like the United States, so different and still behind the Iron Curtain at the age of 9, and this is in the late 80s, it's just such an intense experience that most 9-year-olds don't undergo. You have a lot to say about what happened. But so I think a desire for expression was with me from an early age. But the critical additional component was that I was blessed to have parents who liked hearing me talk. Whenever I had something to say, they never shut me down. So I think both these things from an early age, A, I had the material, but B, I had the enablers, so to speak. I think my parents came to regret their encouragement when I told them I wanted to become a fiction writer, but at least at an early age, they were very encouraging in my self-expression.
Yeah, I think that's a great connection to the characters of Don't Let My Baby Do Rodeo, because I think I felt that as well, because I think I can remember growing up, Boris, and telling people I wanted to be an author or an artist, and they said, you know, you have to get a real job too. That's something that Maya and Alex, you know, the characters in the book, you know, it's funny how you can be seen to be rebellious when you are not doing exactly what other people thought that you should be doing. And so for you, I mean, was part of the fun of this story being able to show that, you know, part of the real joy of life is to actually discover life by living it, not so much going by how other people feel as though your life should be, but being able to experience life and experience the joys of life, even when every day is not going to be a good day?
That's absolutely true. I mean, these two ideas of America are very at loggerheads with each other. On the one hand, it is this country where you're supposed to be able, you know, it's got the gospel of the American dream. You're supposed to be able to follow your passion and make something of yourself, and which, of course, was not possible in a place like the Soviet Union. On the other hand, it's a tough place to live, and security goes a long way. And if you want to be a dancer or a writer or start your own business or God knows what else, it's sometimes hard to come by not only encouragement from the people around you, but just institutional support from the economy, banks, what have you. And so there's just this great temptation as you make your way through American life to fall into something more secure. And that is very much the struggle that Maya, the protagonist of this novel, undergoes. In her case, it's exacerbated because she is coming from the former Soviet Union, which is built very differently in these regards. But there is a kind of what she calls a devil in her head. In her case, it's about she wants to become a chef. She wants to cook. But she falls in love with a man and falls into his family, who are of a very different mind about how you make a life, build stability, security, and so forth. For them, income is in first place, not passion. And here we get sort of another tributary into the story, which is what do we expect of women in our culture, both in that place and in this one. And in this book, Maya is someone who gives 20 years of her life, some of her most prime years, to this expectation that she should be a kind of anchor who first and foremost looks after her parents-in-law and her husband and her son, and sort of if there's a minute left over in the day, then it's for herself. That is very much the gospel of female life in the place that I come from. And also sometimes in American life too, especially in the generation of women that preceded mine. And it's sort of that experience that I wanted to explore. And then there's this kind of fantasy, excuse me, of this woman deciding to change all that because she has a transformative experience out west pursuing some information about her adopted son.
Yeah. I think that is it. You know, I think that it was one of those interesting things. One of the passages when you were just talking, Boris, I thought about as she was having this conversation with Alex, you know, about, you know, what were they going to do? How was this all going to work out? You know, then, of course, mentioning where we're going to find a babysitter, Alex asked, and Maya says, I don't know. We'll figure it out. I think that's the thing. You know, I think it's the fear of the unknown that stops so many people. It's so interesting because I thought about when I was prepping for your segment that is what keeps so many of us going for our goals and dreams in the first place. We don't know what's going to happen, and so we say, well, we better just stay with the devil we do know than what, you know, what we don't know. And so I thought about you, though. I mean, you have had such success, of course, with the book, you know, Replacement Life. I mean, how did you find that courage to be able to not allow fear to stop you in pursuing your own goals and dreams?
I just want to say that if there's somebody out there who is pursuing an entrepreneurial life and does not feel terrifying dread all the time, even after some level of success, I want to meet them and I want to learn from them because I'm not like that at all. But I think it also counts for more when you discover fear inside yourself and then somehow find the courage to sort of to hang on and keep going. It is, of course, very, very difficult to live day in and day out with that discomfort where you don't know when your paycheck is coming and from where, and to hustle like crazy to try to make things happen. And that is basically the way that I made my life from 24 until very recently, and in some way including today. And again, I just want to emphasize that it is extremely uncomfortable to sort of be 1 month away from bankruptcy, to have only 1 month living expenses in the bank account, and to keep knocking on doors that usually stay closed. And I can't say that there was some kind of miraculous understanding or insight or foresight that permitted me to persevere. At every step of the way, it felt like some sort of just a little bit of help, some literary person, an agent or an editor who said, okay, this draft isn't perfect, but it's got potential, keep going. Or some artist calling you that said, you know what, let us give you a month of sort of free writing time at this foundation that we have. Some assignment that allowed me to pocket enough change to spend a couple of weeks working on fiction and nothing else. At every step of the way, there's some kind of, perhaps it is miraculous in a way, that allows you to just keep going forward. And it's best not to think too far ahead because then sort of your eyes get real dim. But I have to say that you probably have heard, we hear this all the time. Looking back on it, I don't know how I myself endured that discomfort. I will say that the younger you start, the better, because I felt like I had a tolerance for risk and loss in my 20s that I maybe don't feel in the same way now in my late 30s.
Yeah. You know what I thought of, and I think you'll see the connection, and I think our audience will as well. Boris, it reminds me of what Maya does say about how she felt, even when she did not know how things were going to turn out. I am filled with nervous energy. I can't focus. I feel like I'm going to make a mistake. Actually, I felt that long before coming here. In truth, I feel safer here. I should be more afraid, and then I realize I'm not. You know, I think that the thing is, sometimes, you know, we kind of, I was speaking to a guest recently, and she talked about sometimes it takes a little bit of crazy to change the world. So sometimes I think we have to kind of embrace the craziness of things in order to be able to advance to something bigger than ourselves. Was that one of the big takeaways for you for this book? Even though it is, again, as I said in the beginning of our conversation, it is fiction, but that is one of the truths for all of us, that in order to change things, in order to do something that has never been done before, we have to be willing to take those risks.
That's exactly so. And it's especially challenging in Maya's case, because she's trying to make this change not in her 20s and not in her 30s. But, my parents often say to me when I sort of urge them to interact differently with me by way of explaining that they remain sort of Soviet people in some way in their psychology, they say, oh, we're too old to change. And I really just so disagree vehemently with that, because I think we're too old to change when we're dead. And it is indeed the case that only the people who decide to take a detour, to take a turn away from what makes sense to everybody else, who end up changing something in the world. Not always, by the way. Half the time they end up failing, which is the risk of it all. The other risk is this terrible fright of walking away from the herd. If you're someone who places a lot of stock in community, recognition, acceptance, understanding, and as an immigrant, I always have, because I've always been on the outside in, it is doubly hard to walk away and try. But I also want to leave my mark on the world, however small, and the only way to do that is indeed to try to do what Maya does and to just walk away from the herd and blaze your own path.
Yeah, what a powerful thing. And that's exactly what you've been able to do, Boris. And by example, you've been able to show us how we can do the same thing. And I think that is what the characters of this book, even though they're entertaining, I think also will continue to be with us because of that, for that very reason, because they are able to show us what all of us are able to do if we're willing to move past our fear. Again, everyone, author Boris Fishman has been our guest. Great conversation with you, Boris. The book is Don't Let My Baby Do Rodeo. For those who have not had a chance to get it, you can head over to our friends at Amazon.com. There it's available in its many formats. Boris, how can our audience stay connected with you, though?
Probably the best way is through my website, which is borisfishman.com, all one word, and through there's connections to Facebook, Twitter, and all that other good stuff.
Thank you so much for taking out the time, and for those joining us on the online of our program, Boris was very gracious to be patient with us. We had a little connection snafu at the beginning of our segment. For our radio audience, you have no idea what I'm talking about, but Boris, we do appreciate you staying around for us and looking forward to our next conversation together for sure.
It was great to talk to you, and I really appreciate the way you read the book, Cyrus. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. Glad to have you on. And for your audience, thank you all for tuning in to another edition of Conversations Live. For our radio audience, you all stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for you. But us joining us online, though, we are going to lose you. So if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Just click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.